Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and others on the interwebs. You are listening to the Weeb Trash Can Podcast. Welcome! Hi, I'm Byron D0. This is episode 2.
Alright, this is G. Paulino, Megatron, smoothest voice coming at you live from the studio.
Maggie D, what's up?
Hello, I'm Brittany, 606, Defender of Justice.
And here's lastly, Mike McCann, guy, here to give you the news.
Okay, so tonight's episode, we are going to be talking about anime, which endings let us down. Did I say that correctly?
Disappointing endings, let you down.
And, just to be clear, we're not talking about series that were disappointing overall, but series that had a huge build-up, but ultimately didn't live up to the hype that the overall narrative gave us. So we've been talking about beforehand, and we got a couple of good ones here. I had to think about this one for a while. I really had to go into my back catalog of anime that have let me down over the years, and I didn't want... I think the one that I'm going to go with is Tsubasa Chronicles. To be fair, that was a series that's let me down on both fronts with the manga and the anime, but mainly just because Clamp anime have this habit of, for the most part, just giving you the makings of a great story and then just never committing to it. They did it with X, they did it with, to a lesser extent, Cardcaptor Sakura, but this was long before they did the Fairy Card Saga, which they're doing now. And they did it with Tsubasa Chronicle. Now, I hadn't read the manga beforehand when I started it. I went into this pretty fresh. I just liked the idea of this being like essentially a Cardcaptor Sakura fan fiction where the focus was more on Shaoran than Sakura. And I like the idea that they had feelings for each other from the very beginning. It wasn't really anything they had to develop. And I don't know, somewhere along the way, the whole idea of dimension hopping between different worlds sounded cool, and I love, the visuals. I loved all the really interesting characters, but because there wasn't enough content, the anime just kind of ended. It was the first series I can remember in the 2000s to split up its narrative in the seasons, and that was it. Just by,
I think abrupt endings overall end up kind of like letting you down. Nothing ends up being resolved. Then there's those animes where they have this great lead on, then they get resolved, but in the most worst possible way. It's just terrible.
Okay, so how did this particular series, and I'm going to say right now that this episode is going to be full of spoilers so that we can discuss how the ending let us down. So many spoilers. So what specifically about this series, made you pick it? What about the ending was so terrible or so much of a letdown?
It was just so abrupt. The anime industry is notorious for, adapting shows that have the manga content catch up too quickly. And I'm guessing because Clamp is such a treasure in the manga industry, they just didn't want to, bastardize it with filler.
That's fair. That would normally be a good thing.
Yeah, it normally would, except they never went back to it. There are a lot of series that are guilty of that,
Just leaving it in waters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rurouni Kenshin. But the less I talk about Watsuki, the better.
There you go.
That's why I didn't pick him, because I'm just I don't want to give his property any more attention than he's already getting.
Well, alright, so how would you fix that ending?
Honestly, there's no way to fix the ending unless you get, a new production team in, other than Clamp, to tell the story.
Did the manga keep going and end well?
It kept going, but it didn't end well. It did not end well.
That's fair.
If I'm gonna talk about it, sure, I'll talk about it. There was a conflict with an antagonist. The series is going through so many antagonists, and in the ending, Shaoran, Kurogane, and Fei leave Sakura back in the Cloud Kingdom, and they continued traveling through worlds. You know, this whole build up to their relationship becoming something. Even though the fact, like, he had to give up, in order to save her life, he had to basically give up the memories that the two of them had. And then it's just like, oh, you can't, I'm going somewhere away from you. Because reasons. Like, Clamp never explains why he has to go. He just decides to keep traveling.
I guess that is what it is right there.
Mm-hmm. And it was a letdown in the sense where it's just like, I had no idea what was going on in the end, in the grand scheme of things. So I'm not really mad. I'm just like, well, that was a thing.
Less mad, more confused. I'm not mad, I'm just disappointed.
Exactly.
You sound like a total mom right there.
I was born to be like a mom teacher. That is, yes. That is my brand.
I'm an older brother. I'm an older brother and I work with children, so yeah. I can totally relate.
Alright, so the anime I picked, though, was very disappointing in the ending. It was Air Gear. And, you know, Air Gear has phenomenal music. It has an awesome theme of, you know, working your way up from the bottom. It's also technically an extreme sport because it's inline skating, but with, like, I guess, hover blades or whatever. I don't know what it's called.
Future skating.
Yeah, future skating.
Jet skates.
There you go, jet skates. So you have this incredible story with Icky. And how he's, like, destined to be the Sky King. So, like, the Sky King was this legendary skater who was able to unify all the other skaters that were awesome. And just, like, this whole legendary aspect to it. And in the last episode, he breaks the Sky King's last record. And that's how it ends. And it's like, okay, well, yeah, you've been hinting that he's the Sky King the entire anime. Why are you just going to give me one more hint? Like, where's the end? And, you know, sure, you can end it on a cliffhanger, which always keeps people talking about it, which is kind of what we're doing here, and that's the point. But on the same token, like, give me something a bit more concrete. We know that he's the Sky King or the next Sky King, so why is he going to give me more stuff that affirms that? And that's been my entire beef with Air Gear, because the manga continued, and I don't know if it's ended by now.
Oh, it ended, and it suffers from the same kind of lackluster ending as Tsubasa Chronicles.
See, that's what I'm saying. Like, why? Why? Why are you going to build up this amazing story and then have it end on a...
I think I might have an answer for that. Because Oh Great just gets bored with his projects.
I can understand that as a writer, but on the same token, you got to give it some sort of punch. What is it? You have to give it some frisson. Then that's what Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, so he always gave his endings frisson, which means like impact or like that that X factor, right? Mm-hmm. And it didn't matter if it was a short story or a long story, it always had that impact. And that's what you got to do for your endings. Like even if it's a terrible ending, but as long as it has that impact, like everybody dies. Like Devil Man Crybaby. The ending to that was like, whoa, what? And then when you really realize what's really happening at the ending, and then you can be like, oh, that's what happened. Cause yo, when they killed his love interest, that got me go. I was like, this anime sucks. I don't want to watch it anymore. They don't get together. But you know, even when they dash all your hopes, right? They still can give you an ending that resolves it all. And so that's all I'm asking for, is an ending that resolves it all. And I think, you know, the best example that I've ever seen of a cliffhanger ending was Cowboy Bebop. Because my man, yes. Like, Faye Valentine comes running in. It's like, oh my god, Spike! And he's there all bloody. Ugh. And he's like, bang! And hey. He just collapses. And it says, the end, see you,
space cowboy. See, that's cowboy. Your Poe ending right
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that's the frisson right there. That's the impact.
That single word that sums it all up.
Mm-hmm. See you around, space cowboy.
Right?
See you around, space cowboy.
So I know this is only episode 2, but can I put down right now that we're just going to mention Cowboy Bebop every episode?
Oh, heck yeah. It's, pretty much. It's such a perfect anime. It's like, it has everything you need.
Fight me.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, I was going to ask, how would you fix it? But you kind of just summed up how you would fix it.
Yeah, you got to give
it a goddamn ending. Yeah. All right. I have many years worth of pent-up anger.
Okay, let it open the floodgates.
About a series called Descendants of Darkness, otherwise known as Yami no Matsue. Oh my goodness. So I spent my week rereading this series. I guess let me start with the anime. The anime follows the manga pretty loyally, and then it follows the first, like, four or five kind of plot lines, and then just kind of ends in a end life or afterlife goes on, you know? And that's not great, but it's one of those endings where you're like, okay, alright, like, they wrapped up kind of what they needed to, and they're going to continue being partners and go on, and the rest is up to your imagination. Okay, fine, I'll take it. The manga, however. So this series is about two Shinigami, and the afterlife is basically a bureaucracy. It is, yes. The afterlife is a bureaucracy. And this is about the department that is in charge of bringing in basically problem souls or lost souls. People who died, but their souls never showed up, you know, for the afterlife. People who should have died, like their lifespan is run out in the books, but they're still somehow alive. These sort of weird soul mysteries. And there's basically a police department in the afterlife, staffed with Shinigami, who always have to work in partners. So this follows the partnership of Suzuki and Hisoka. Suzuki is a 26-year-old who died, like, 70 years ago. And he's a very... Words are not coming right now. I'm so mad, and I'm trying to rein it in to describe the series.
Very childlike.
Yes, that's very much. He's the very childlike caricature, you know? He's an adult, but he's always eating food, and he's slacking off, and he's that kind of, you know, trope. Yeah.
Yes.
As opposed to Hisoka, who died at 16 years old, and we see him when he died only a year ago, and he is very serious, and he has an incredibly tragic past. They both do, but they deal with it in very different ways. So anyways, this whole series follows those two, and the main villain is a guy called Meraki. And Meraki is one of the most horrifying villains I've ever come across. He's basically a mad doctor who is responsible for the death of Hisoka. When Hisoka was 13, he came across Meraki murdering someone. Meraki then raped him and placed a curse on him so that he spent 3 years in never-ending suffering agony while he watched over him as his doctor until he finally died. Horrifying, horrifying guy. Then he shows up again in their very first freaking case. Of course, Meraki's behind it. And he immediately zooms in, not on Hisoka, but on Suzuki. And he becomes obsessed with Suzuki. So you have this dynamic of a really engaging, really terrifying villain who keeps coming back throughout and is really entwined with the whole story. And you have these two amazing partners, and you see their differing personalities clash off each other, but you also see them coming together and balancing each other out really well. Here's the thing. In the manga, it ends with a complete tone change. Hisoka decides that he needs to get more powerful, so he goes to basically the spirit world, which is located in the internet, and goes on a spirit quest with Kawaii Cactus.
That sounds like Final Fantasy. Keep going.
Yeah. It's a weird tone change. So he goes off to find this great dragon so he can be powerful and no longer be a hindrance to Suzuki, while Suzuki hangs out with the rest of his demons that he's chill with, that he summons because he's friends with all of them. While they're in the internet spirit world, a mission comes into headquarters to investigate Hisoka's family. So they're like, oh shit, well, good thing they're away, because we couldn't send them to do this. So you have two basically background characters go and check out Hisoka's family. It is weird. There's some kind of curse going on that's never fully explained. And then the last book ends with a scene of Hisoka's abusive father getting tentacle raped by a demon who is haunting their family while his dead son is off in internet spirit world with a kawaii cacti. And that is where it fucking ends.
The anime?
No, the manga.
That's a little trippy.
Yeah.
It was ridiculous. It was so bad. And it was so, like I said, the tone completely shifted. There was no reason for any of this to happen. Like, I get the plot line where Hisoka wants to get stronger. And I can kind of get the comic relief character because Hisoka is such a serious character and was becoming really unhealthily obsessed with the idea of getting more powerful so that Suzuki wasn't constantly one-upping him. But it was just... It was over the top, it was absurd, and then there was this other plot line that could have been so poignant and so relevant because Hisoka's family was super abusive of him while he was alive. And so you think that they're going to deal with some of that, but nope. Just slimy tentacles with the character that you don't know, and that's it. That's the end of it. It's ridiculous. And it's made me very angry because... there are a lot of problems with this series, and I'd love to discuss it again later about some problematic queer coding that goes into it, but that's not what we're here for today.
How old again is that series?
I believe it was first published in 96. So now here's the fun part. Remember, let's flash back. Remember how I said that I was rereading it this week?
Yeah.
So I'm rereading it. I'm going through. I'm seeing it online because the friend who I borrowed it all from is out in Western Mass and I couldn't get a hold of her books. So I'm you know, reading it online, and I get to the end. I'm like, oh god, yes, this. Oh, there's a button that says next chapter. I say, what? Turns out, after an 8-year hiatus, she released one more book.
Oh jeez. Wow.
So I'm like, one, real excited. Okay, are we gonna get some kind of explanation? Some kind of closure? No. We have this one more book where she tries to jam everything that was unresolved into the span of, you know, like, I think it was 6 chapters in a manga, like in Japan, they're released in the individual little books and they're released in chapters. So you've got, like, you know, 6 to 8 chapters in a manga that you'd go out and buy off the shelf.
Yeah.
In that one book, she tries to justify the tentacle rape, and she tries to, Hisoka finds the dragon god, who then starts a war and tries to kill everybody, and you have this confused jumble of just way too much going on, and she's trying to wrap everything up, and nothing gets wrapped up. I just spent the last day and a half reading with, like, a corked head and a quizzical expression and my mouth halfway open. It was absolutely bizarre, almost even more so than the original ending. And yeah, no, so that's a lot, and I don't know how I would fix it. There's no fixing it.
Well, I remember you bringing this up in, like a pre-show conversation, where you mentioned how you compared it to how Hideki Anno treated Evangelion fans, and, like, the more I hear about it now, I'm just like, Jesus Christ, this is probably worse than End of Eva.
It was so bad. It was so bad. And it was torturous to read because I read through the series again this week and I fell in love with it all over again, even knowing how it was going to end. You can't help it. I love the characters. I love that she has some beautifully intricate plots with characters that weave in and out of it really well, and then everything just went to hell. And supposedly the reason for her 8-year hiatus is that she hurt her hand real bad, but that doesn't explain the last book.
Now, was that her drawing hand?
It was, yes. Actually, the final book that was released is in a very different artistic style. So I don't know if she hired someone else and just, like, told them the story, or if she had to reinvent her art style because she had hurt her hand, but that still doesn't explain why she did the complete tone shift and, like, cliffhanger tentacle rape. I'm not even, like, a tertiary character. It was so bizarre.
So, other than Cowboy Bebop, what has been the best ending you've ever seen?
I recommend FMA to a lot of people, because both Brotherhood and the original had really good endings. The FMA manga, so Brotherhood for the anime, I love the way that they wrapped that all up. That was really, really good. And again, I'm saying right now, this is a spoiler episode. The ultimate sacrifice that Ed has to give up in order to basically save everything is to give up his access to alchemy. And the way that it's all been explained within the series, it makes perfect sense, and no one's ever thought to do it before. And that's the ultimate source of power. And you can literally sever that link, and that grants you enough power for that one huge finale. And it all made sense, and it was all very poetic the way it came. Alright, so yeah, moving on.
Looks like I'm next. So for this week, as soon as last week we had mentioned disappointing anime, it's the first thing. Not disappointing anime, but disappointing anime endings. It was Hunter x Hunter. I, disclaimer, have not read the manga, so I only have the anime to go off of. But this was a series that it's 148 episodes. I sat down and finished it in like 2-3 weeks. I'm a serial binger. It's really bad, but this series was so good. Every character, every arc was just so great, and you know, you get to know the character Gon, and you get to see him build his relationships as he, you know, looks for his father and tries to become a hunter, and then you spend all this time with him, watching him train and, you know, gaining friendships, but also, you know, going through all this loss with him, and not just him, but with Killua and Leorio and Havoka, all of these characters. And then, you know, you get to the Chimera Ant arc, which is unbelievable. I still go back and I watch that arc to this day, like every once in a while, just be like, I'm very bored, I think I'm gonna watch that. And then, you know, that all winds down, and you get to the last couple episodes, which is really exciting. And, you know, Gon finally, like, he wakes up and, you know, he goes and he sees his father finally, like, after all of this time. Because if you haven't read it or haven't seen it, you know, his father abandons him, you know, when he's very, very young. And so you finally get this reunion, and it is just so bad. I hate this guy. He's just so young and so just immature and stubborn, and oh god. And it's really nice because you do get to see him kind of be like a father figure, teaching him these lessons, like. The first time they meet, he tells them that he has to go see Kite and, you know, apologize, and, you know, he teaches them a whole lesson there, and then, you know, he goes and he does the thing, and his father says, I'll be waiting for you. He goes back, and he sees a note that says that he'll be at the World Tree, which is the tallest tree in the world. Normally about 30 people make it to the top every year, and, you know, it's this crazy thing, and you think it's going to be such an amazing moment, you know, and it takes him like 20 minutes to get up the tree, and then you get there, and there's his father on this big nest with these weird birds, and like, so that's weird in itself. And then, you know, you have this moment where he does it, and he finally gets this time with his father, and it's just him talking for like 10 minutes. And like, it's nothing too amazing, nothing that really grabs you until, like, there's, at the end of the episode, there's this little tiny montage where you see them, like, laughing and telling stories and, you know, doing the father and something, but you don't actually get to see that other than that, like, 30-second montage, which really, really sucks. And I just, you know, watched it again, like, a half hour ago, and I was so just taken back. It's just, you know, and then not only this, but then you've also got Killua, who just leaves. Yeah. Like, my OTP just, like, splits up and just parts ways. Like, it's so rude. Like, and then he goes up the tree, and then there's just this weird, awkward moment with his father. Like, and Connor's so much better than I am, because he's such an optimist.
Yeah.
Throughout the whole thing, he's, like, smiling, and he's so happy to even, like, be one with this tree. And meanwhile, I'm here, like, this is really how it's ending. Like, this is it, but, you know.
I would definitely agree with you there, because, like, if I were gone, and I had seen my dad after all these years, after hearing from his mouth, I don't want to meet you, I would have beat him with a punch in the face.
Yeah, but, I mean, as you see throughout the whole series, like, Gon is just this little ball of sunshine, and no matter what he goes through, like, the people that he cares about, like, he will die for them. And he literally, you literally see him sacrifice his life to save the people he cares about. And I think that's a really sweet thing, that, you know, even though he doesn't get, I mean, I guess he does get that great moment with his dad, and you eventually kind of see it a little bit, but I didn't get to see that. And that sucks for me. I want to see that. Like, because there's this little moment where they're laughing together right at the end, and it like, hurts. Like, that's what I wanted to see, not his dad. Like,
so it sounds like this is the type of character that you love to love. Because of that, you're let down from the fact that he doesn't get, you don't get for him exactly what you want.
Yeah.
So that's why it's a disappointment.
Yeah. I mean, that's supposed to be.
Well, I'd hate to bring you down any further with that storyline, but this would be a manga spoiler, so I'm not going to say nothing about it. Ooh. It's about Gon. Yeah, it's about Gon's fate after the whole, after he gets healed.
Ooh.
I say nothing.
There goes the whole spoiler episode thing, huh? Can't tell me.
I'm trying to be good here.
No. That's fine. Maybe someday I'll actually get around to reading it, but.
What is the difference between talking about spoilers for, like, audience and, like, being total dicks and spoiling everything in the room?
Exactly. Nice.
Like, you decided to click on this. This is your fault of spoilers.
You just go through so much throughout the whole series to just be left with that. That's it. I know there's more in the manga, but, like, for people that, you know, can't always read manga, like, please give us a great ending to the anime, please.
It's understandable.
Yeah.
Alright, for me, it would have to be Space Runaway Hideo. It's a gem from Yoshiyuki Tomino.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. This is the one where he got the nickname Killamall Tomino. Yeah, this is one of those series that just leaves you down and out, because there's no real interest in this one. But my beef was just with the TV series. They resolved the ending with the movie. I mean, you don't always get that little thing. But Full Metal Alchemist, the first one, wasn't completely ended, but they finished, they wrapped some loose ends with the movie.
Yes.
They had Conqueror Shambhala, but then they also had, there were two movies.
No, but that second movie was sort of based around the Brotherhood series, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, that they came out around the same time as Brotherhood.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. Because I remember there being two FMA original series follow-up movies, but maybe I'm mistaken.
That could be wrong.
Well, I just, again, spoiler alert, I just remember that in one of the movies, Alphonse had his body and Edward was shipped to our dimension.
Yes. That's
Shambhala.
Yeah, that's Shambhala? Okay.
Space Runaway Eon. It was like a series he worked on right after Gundam. And pretty much like takes place in the Andromeda Galaxy, where a bunch of like space archaeologists find a couple artifacts, which are giant like trucks that combine into a gyroid, which is the Eon. But somehow this conflicted with this far-flung, I want to call them race, more of a tribe, because they are human, but they think for aliens and vice versa. They're the buff plan, and they go around chasing the Eon across the galaxy, because they think it's the source of all the asteroids that are in their home planet. Like, every time its power gets invoked, like, some planet somewhere gets vaporized.
Jesus.
So it heads up to the end where the princess of the Buff Clan was traveling with the EDM crew. Because she was seeing, like, you're not so different from us. I mean, why not make peace? And she actually knocked boots with the captain of the ship. And they had their mixed baby, but her father wasn't having any of that. And demanded honor be restored and have them all wiped out. And since peace couldn't be found between them, the power of the Eon activated and just vaporized everything.
Suddenly the ending of Char's counterattack didn't seem so bad.
Yeah. Well, at least you got an ending.
I was gonna say, I still feel justified in my ending. I think my ending was pretty bad too.
At least y'all got an ending.
Right? Yeah, no, it's not a competition. It's not a competition, but if it were, I'd win.
Yeah. Here, let me just erase the board.
I mean, goodness, anybody got any runner-ups? Gracious. If anyone has any runner-ups, I would definitely be on board for that.
Runner-ups for disappointing
and or dishonorable mentions.
Dishonorable mentions.
I know. I don't have a dishonorable mention or another bad one, but another good ending was the ending to Jinro and the Wolf Brigade.
Yes.
Talk about classic ending where you find that, alright, spoiler alert, where you find out that Jinro's love interest is like the head of the rebel faction or whatever that he's primarily fighting against. And this dude has to be as cold as Old Man Winter when he has to go and kill her, and she's there because she's feeling it, he's there in his Wolf Brigade armor, and she's reciting Little Red Riding Hood, and I'm like, oh my god, he's not gonna do it, and my man does it, and it's just actually heart wrenching. What?
There was somebody out in the clearing, like I think in the reeds, like they had like a sniper out there.
Yeah, but he was finished.
I need to rewatch that.
But yeah, Jinro and the Wolf Brigade. Check that out, because that ending is definitely on point, and it tugs your heartstrings. But on the same time, you understand why he's like cold with it, because he's a man of his duty. He has to do his job, and he's willing to sacrifice love because of his duty. And those are the types of tropes that, you know, that mess with you, because at the end of the day, she was doing the right thing for the wrong reasons, mm-hmm. and he was doing the wrong thing for the right reasons. So it's heavy on your heart, and it's heavy morally, but it that's what makes it memorable.
Yeah. So actually, along those lines of right and wrong, and I'm gonna talk a little bit about the ending to the main plot line in Death Note. That's pretty universally panned, I found, as like a really disappointing ending, but I think it ended exactly how it needed to. Everybody died in the end because of their own choices and their own decisions, and it was what needed to happen. There were no heroes in that show. There were no good people, air quotes, you know?
What about like that? I'm gonna say right now,
That's fair, but he made his own choices also in like the cop line and also getting sucked in and distracted by it's again that personal life over duty. He fell into that crosshairs a lot, and it's the only survivor is the good cop who's just doing his best.
I mean, no, I guess you couldn't call his sister a survivor because she's like dead inside.
Oh, right? Yeah. No, that was a very tragic ending that a lot of people didn't like because it falls under the, you know, rocks fall, everybody dies, which can be lazy. Mm-hmm. But honestly, the way that series was going, everybody had to die. You couldn't, any one person coming out on top would have defeated the whole moral quandary of the show.
Imagine. A Death Note where Light
wins. What? Are you a Light fan, girl?
I mean, I am. I'm definitely with you where I think the ending was, everything ended the way it should have.
Yeah.
But, mad.
See, alright, I can agree that everything ended the way it should have because after L died, there was almost no purpose to it because at first it's like, alright, yeah, I'm on Light's side because what he's doing is right, he's eliminating all these bad people, but then they flip it on you, and it's like, well, wait a second, he doesn't really have that right, him cleaning up the world, that's not his place, and so you get somebody like L, who is, not only is he morally driven, but he becomes driven to the point where it's like, alright, now I have to find this guy because my life's at stake. And so you get this crazy, intense cat and mouse game that's slowly building up, building up, building up, building up, building up. And then, you know, eventually the mouse gets caught, but I'm telling you right now, if there was a world where L would still survive or somehow can't get caught by Light because of whatever loophole with the Death Note, that would be an amazing.
Yeah,
amazing
and the whole thing about like where the story went after L died is that's when Light started really making mistakes and getting sloppy and just
like degrading.
Devolving.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was his triumph over L was the beginning of his complete and total just devolution.
Yeah, he became complacent.
He became complacent, he became cocky, and that's how these, you know, lesser detectives were able to eventually take him down.
Probably let his guard down as soon as, you know, the cat was gone.
Well, exactly, yeah. He's like, no one can measure up to L, so what do I have to fear? And it's classic hubris. Hubris was his downfall.
I would say for my dishonorable mentions, actually, I kind of have two.
Okay.
First one would be Escaflowne, the movie. I'm not a big fan of movie retellings in anime because you're trying to take 13 to 26 or beyond episodes and smush it into, at best, 2 hours.
I need everyone to know the visual of the three guys in the room all simultaneously took their hands and brought them together. Yes. And it was hysterical to witness.
It's like, I remember, like, just being all excited about the visuals of Escaflowne in the movie. Like, I loved all the, I loved, like, the crisp colors. I loved the style. I loved how much more badass Vaughn was.
Even the music was cool.
Yes. And I love, like, I've always loved the overall design of Escaflowne as a mech, and they just cranked that design up to 11. Everything else was just, everything else was kind of just like, okay, this is cool, and it's like, that's it. She just leaves the world. It's like,
deuces.
Yeah, they just beat, deuces. Like, they beat the bad guy, and then back to my world. It's like, why are you fucking out? You can't get my back. You can't get my back. I'm pretty sure I lost that DVD, but even if I did know where it was, I wouldn't want to.
You'd lose it again.
Yes. I wouldn't want to go through that again because it's just like, it ruined all the parts that I loved about that movie for me. I'm just like, why'd you do that? Number two, Revolutionary Girl Utena, the movie.
That's okay. Something that changed so much between the anime and the manga and the movie. Yes. And there's, it's a great series, but there are some weird pitfalls to it depending on which medium you choose to view it in.
Yes. I don't recommend going into it, making the movie your maiden voyage, simply for that reason, because that was my mistake. And for a couple, for I think 3 years afterwards, it took me a while to finally get into the series. But again, great visuals, gorgeous soundtrack, but that's because they took the soundtrack from the show, which is like this biblical operatic style soundtrack, and it, the animation was so solid. The art style from the anime, again, cranked up to 11. The fight choreography, like, I love a good sword fight. And, like, you have so many just different disciplines going at it, like fencing versus broadsword versus katana fighting. But I digress. When we get into the existential side of this narrative, you have, like, all these people that were after Anthy. And now, you know, because they have basically forged this unbreakable bond, they're trying to run away to their own place in the world. What happens? They literally turn into a car, and the world is trying to get them. And it's just like,
man, I have never seen the movie, and I super don't want to. I love that manga. It's a great story, but I'd heard bad things about the movie.
Yes.
And as you're talking about it, going like, oh man, I'd love to see some of that fight choreography. That'd be so cool, but what?
I mean, in hindsight, I see the symbolism, but it's just like, why would you do that? What was the point of the symbolism? Like, couldn't you just done like a tender moment between two characters where they actually share a kiss or something? There were better ways to do like the whole existential get away from the world because you're the only person that matters ending.
So they don't get into a car and drive away. They turn into a car?
Yes, and then the car breaks away, and it's just the two of them embracing each other naked. On, like, the chassis.
Yeah. See, that I can get behind. Yes. Anyone who hasn't seen Revolutionary Girl Utena, it is a rallying call for lesbians. Yes. Like, it's real good. It's real good.
And it's got the ultimate fuckboy in there, Sayonji. Actually, no, I think Toga's probably more of a fuckboy than Sayonji.
It's got a whole lot of fuckboys.
I was gonna say, it sounds kind of like Soul Eater.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. A little bit, yeah. But better done. Yeah. hey, I like Soul Eater. I'm just saying. I like Soul Eater, but overall, Revolutionary Girl Utena is a better series. Especially coming from the manga point of view, which has the most copacetic story. Because like I said, if you come at it from the manga, from the anime or from the movie, you're going to get the same characters and the same premise, but very different product.
So, don't start with the movie.
No, that was a mistake, hon.
Yeah. Hindsight is 2020.
Yeah, if you start with a Cowboy Bebop movie, you'd be like pretty much an episode away from the end.
True. Yeah, but the Bebop movie is meant to fall kind of right in the late middle of the series. It's not particularly spoilery. You can absolutely watch the movie and then jump into the series.
Yes, yeah.
You're just going to be confused as to why there's only two of them at the beginning of the series, because the movie has the whole crew assembled.
If anything, the movie will make you want to watch the series.
Yeah. Yep.
Fire D-Zero, catch me on all the major social media outlets, including Vero, because that's a thing. Not sure what's going to become of that, but it's cool. Check it out. I write for Nerd Calibre regularly, trying to get my review of Peter Rabbit up on the internet sometime in the next couple of weeks.
This is Megatron, signing off. You can find me on Twitter, Megatron007X.
Maggie B, you can find me on Twitter at Maggie B. Feel free to say hi. Have a great week.
And Butt606 signing off. You can catch me on Twitter, 606 with two E's.
No Defender of Justice this time?
Oh, well, that's a given.
Yeah.
Justice is always being defended.
Always.
Well, then lastly, I'm Mark Mechanical Guy. I don't yet have a Twitter handle, but I'm sure that'll change. Aside from that, probably find me up in the skies in the colony.
Nice. Be careful it doesn't drop.
Chair, right? So next week's topic is a special birthday episode.
Woo!
Yeah, and what are we going to be talking about just for you?
Horror anime.
Next week is a happy birthday horror episode.
Very nice. Until then, ja matana! Ciao, ciao.